Hello, and welcome to Maplewood Barn Radio Theater. Sit back, put your feet up. We're going to tell you a story. Today's presentation is taken from a short story by Edgar Allan Poe called The System of Dr. Tarr and Professor Feather. It was originally published in November of 1845 in Graham's Magazine. If you've ever read Poe's surprisingly humorous story, you know that the doctor's name is spelled T-A-R-R, and the professor in the title is named F-E-T-H-E-R. This is not what we would expect from Poe, but it still has traces of his macabre sense of humor. This program is brought to you with the generous assistance of KBIA Radio and other contributors to the Maplewood Barn Theater. And now, we hope you'll enjoy The System of Dr. Tarr and Professor Feather by Edgar Allan Poe.
While on a tour through the extreme southern provinces of France, my route led me within a few miles of a certain private madhouse, about which I had heard much in Paris through my medical friends. As I had never visited a place of the kind, I thought the opportunity too good to be lost. My medical companions had furnished me with a letter of introduction to Monsieur Maillard, the superintendent of the facility. I rode through a dank and gloomy wood until the asylum came into view. It was a dilapidated chateau, which inspired me with absolute dread, and checking my horse, I half resolved to turn back. I soon, however, grew ashamed of my weakness and proceeded. As I rode up to the gateway, I perceived it slightly open, and the visage of a man peering through.
Halt! What do you want?
I am looking for a Monsieur Maillard. It is my understanding that he is the superintendent of this institution. I have a letter of introduction from some of his acquaintances in Paris, and would beg an interview if he is available.
Might I see the letter? Yes, well, I am Monsieur Maillard, and I see you come well recommended. How may I be of assistance?
I have always wished to see a madhouse, and was told that this would be an interesting place to visit.
Welcome, then. Please come in. You may hang your cloak here.
The music is quite beautiful, so poignant. Oh, excuse me. I hope I did not offend the madam.
Oh, no, nothing of the kind. She is naturally shy.
In Paris, I was told this institution is managed upon what is termed the system of soothing, that all punishments are avoided, that even confinement is seldom resorted to, that the patients, while secretly watched, are left much apparent liberty, and that most of them are permitted to roam about the house and grounds in ordinary apparel. So I was curious, is she one of the...
Oh, no, a member of my family, my niece, Eugenie, and a most accomplished woman.
I beg a thousand pardons for the suspicion, but of course you will excuse me. The administration of your affairs here is well understood in Paris, and I thought it just possible, you know.
Ah, yes, say no more. It is myself who should thank you for your commendable thoughtfulness. While the system of soothing, as you call it, was in operation, and my patients were permitted the privilege of roaming to and fro at will, they were often aroused to a dangerous frenzy by injudicious persons who called to inspect the house. I was obliged to enforce a rigid policy, admitting only those whose discretion could be relied upon.
Do I understand you, then, to say that the soothing system, of which I have heard so much, is no longer in effect?
It is now several weeks since we have renounced it forever.
Indeed. This is astonishing.
Ah, we found it, sir, absolutely necessary to return to the old rules. The danger of the soothing system was at all times appalling, and its advantages have been much overrated. I believe, sir, that in this house it has been given a fair trial, if ever in any. We did everything that rational humanity could suggest. I am sorry that you could not have paid us a visit at an earlier period that you might have judged for yourself. But I presume you are conversant with the soothing practice, with its details?
Not altogether. What I have heard has been at third or fourth hand.
The system in general terms was one in which the patients were humored. We contradicted no fancies which entered their brains. On the contrary, we not only indulged but encouraged them, and many of our most permanent cures have been thus effected. There is no argument which so touches the feeble reason of the madman as the argumentum ad absurdum. We have had men, for example, who fancied themselves chickens, The cure was to insist upon the thing as a fact, to accuse the patient of stupidity and not sufficiently perceiving it to be a fact, and thus to refuse him any other diet for a week than that which properly appertains to a chicken. In this matter, a little corn and gravel were made to perform wonders.
Fascinating, but was this the only remedy used?
By no means. We put much faith in amusements of a simple kind, such as music, dancing, gymnastic exercises, cards, certain books, and so forth. We affected to treat each individual as if for some ordinary physical disorder, and the word lunacy was never employed. Another tactic was to entrust each lunatic to guard the actions of all the others. To repose confidence in the understanding or discretion of a madman is to gain his confidence. In this way, we were able to dispense with guards. But it was to no avail.
And you had no punishments of any kind?
None.
And you never confined your patients?
Very rarely. Now and then, if some individual became disorderly, we conveyed him to a secret cell, lest his malady should infect the rest, and there kept him until we could dismiss him to his friends. For with the raging maniac, there is little we can do. He is usually removed to the public hospitals.
And you have now changed all this, and you think for the better?
Decidedly. The system had its disadvantages and even its dangers. It is happily no longer in use throughout France.
I am very much surprised at what you tell me, for I made sure that, at this time, it was the only method of treatment for mania that existed in any portion of the country.
You are young yet, my friend, but the time will arrive when you will learn to judge for yourself what is going on in the world, without trusting the gossip of others. Believe nothing you hear, and only half that you see. Now, about our sanitarium, it is clear that some ignoramus has misled you. After dinner, however, I will be happy to take you on a tour of the house, and introduce to you a system which, in the opinion of everyone who has witnessed its operation, is the most effectual yet devised.
Your own? One of your own invention?
I am proud to acknowledge that it is, at least in some measure. However, let us dine first. To a sensitive mind, it is always more or less shocking to view the patients, and I do not wish to spoil your appetite for dinner. After we feast, your nerves will be sufficiently steadied. Come, let us join the others in the dining room.
Ah, what a marvelous gathering, Monsieur Maillard.
Yes, you will find that all our guests are people of high breeding, well-educated. Yet this does entail certain eccentricities. For example, you may note that many of the ladies are not attired in what a Parisian might consider good taste. Their ostentatious finery could be considered excessive by some.
Yes, so I see. Ah, there's your niece. She has changed into accoutrements that are consistent with the other guests.
True, but thank heaven she has outgrown the custom of wearing her bosoms or arms shamefully exposed in the manner of many female guests, especially the elderly.
Yes, well, that is comforting.
Due to our provincial location, there are many antiquated notions of fashion.
So I see. The table is beautifully set, I must say. The food looks sumptuous.
Thank you. It should prove a marvelous repast. Please, seat yourself and enjoy the conversation. One of our favorite topics is the institution and its inhabitants. Perhaps you can gain some initial insights into the nature of our little asylum.
That is most kind of you, Monsieur Maillard.
Everyone, your attention, please. As superintendent of this institution, let me introduce an honored guest. Please, make him welcome at our table.
One question, Monsieur Maillard. All the windows appear to be barred and shuttered. Is there a reason for that?
Yes, of course. This used to be the lunatic's dining room before the new arrangements were made. We have not yet had time to remove all the devices to prevent escape. It is nothing to trouble yourself over. Now, let us find seats and enjoy ourselves. Here, take this chair.
Thank you again, Monsieur Maillard. You are most kind.
Hello and welcome.
Hello.
You know, we once had a fellow here, a fellow that fancied himself a teapot. And is it not interesting how often this particular delusion has entered the brains of various lunatics? There is scarcely an insane asylum in France which cannot supply a human teapot. Our gentleman was a Britannia-ware teapot and was very careful to polish himself every morning. with buckskin.
Oh, yes, yes. And then we had here not long ago a person who had taken it into his head that he was a donkey, which, allegorically speaking, you will say, was quite true. For a long time, he would eat nothing but thistles. But we sure cured him of this idea by insisting that he eat nothing else. Then he was perpetually kicking on his heels.
Mr. Daycock, I will thank you to behave yourself. Please keep your feet to yourself. You have spoiled my brocade. Is it necessary to illustrate a remark in such a style? Our friend here can surely comprehend you without all this. Upon my word, you are as nearly as great a donkey as the poor unfortunate imagined himself. Your acting is very natural.
Oh, I beg your pardon, mademoiselle. A thousand pardons. I had no intention of offending mademoiselle Laplace. Let me kiss your hand.
My friend, allow me to recommend this morsel of veal. You will find it particularly fine.
But, Monsieur Maillard, it appears to be a small calf roasted whole and set upon its knees with an apple in its mouth, as is the English fashion for dressing a hare.
Yes, that is it, precisely.
Thank you, no. To tell the truth, I am not particularly partial to veal, for I do not find that it altogether agrees with me. I will, however, try some of the rabbit.
Ah, yes. The rabbit au chat is most succulent.
The what?
The rabbit au chat?
Why, thank you. Upon second thoughts, no. In my experience, the mixture of cat and rabbit gives me indigestion. I will just help myself to some of the ham.
And then, among other oddities, we had a patient, once upon a time, who adamantly insisted he was a quart of a cheese, and went around, with a knife in his hand, soliciting his friends to try a small slice from the middle of his leg.
He was a great fool, beyond doubt, but not to be compared with a certain individual who took himself for a bottle of champagne and always went off with a pop and a fizz in this fashion.
And then there was an ignoramus who mistook himself for a frog, which, by the way, he resembled in no little degree. I wish you could have seen him, sir. His growl was the finest note in the world. B flat. And when he put his elbows on the table, thus, after taking a glass or two of wine, and distended his mouth, thus, and rolled up his eyes, thus, and winked them with excessive rapidity, thus, why then, sir, I take it upon myself to say positively, you would have been lost in admiration of the genius of this man.
I have no doubt of it.
And then there was Petit Gaillard, who thought himself a pinch of snuff, and was truly distressed because he could not take himself between his own finger and thumb.
And then there was Jules de Serrier, who was a very singular genius indeed, and went mad with the idea that he was a pumpkin. He persecuted the cook to make him into pies, a thing which the cook indignantly refused to do. For my part, I believe that a pumpkin pie would not have been very capital indeed.
You astonish me.
Very good indeed. You must not be astonished, mon ami. Our friend here is a wit, a droll. You must not take his statements literally.
And then there was the Buffon Le Grand, another extraordinary person in his way. He grew deranged through love and fancied himself possessed of two heads. One of these he maintained to be the head of Cicero. The other he imagined as a composite, being Demosthenes from the top of the forehead to the mouth, and Lord Brougham from the mouth to the chin. He might have convinced you it was true, for he was a man of great eloquence. He had an absolute passion for oratory and could not refrain from display. For example, he used to leap upon the dinner table thus and thus and...
No, no, no demonstrations. Please, get off the table.
And then there was Bouillard, the spinning top. I call him the spinning top because, in fact, he was seized with the droll but not altogether irrational notion that he had been converted into a spinning top. You would have roared with laughter to see him twirl. He would turn round upon one heel by the hour in this matter, so...
But then, Monsieur Bouillard was a madman, and a very silly madman at best, for who, allow me to ask you, ever heard of a human spinning top? The thing is absurd. Madame Joyeuse was a more sensible person, as you know. She had an oddity based on instinct and common sense that gave pleasure to all who had the honor of her acquaintance. She found that by some accident, she had been turned into a rooster. She flapped her wings with prodigious effect. So, and as for her crow, it was delicious. Cock-a-doodle-doo, cock-a-doodle-doo, cock-a-doodle-day-doo-doo-doo-doo.
Madame Joyeuse, I will thank you to behave yourself. You can either conduct yourself as a lady should do, or you can quit the table forthwith. Take your choice.
Pardon me, did you say that she is Madame Joyeuse herself?
Yes, that is correct.
It looks as if your niece has an opinion on the subject.
Oh, Madame Joyeuse was a fool. But there was really much sound sense after all in the opinion of Eugénie Sassafet. She was a very beautiful and painfully modest young lady who thought ordinary attire indecent and wished to dress herself always by getting outside instead of inside of her clothes. It is a thing very easily done after all. You have only to do so, and then so, and then so.
A mere trifle, my friend. We are used to these things and care really very little about them. The lunatics every now and again start to howl en masse, one starting another, as is sometimes the case with a bevy of dogs at night. It occasionally happens, however, that the howls are succeeded by an effort to escape when the situation can become dangerous.
And how many patients are lodged here?
At present we have not more than 10 altogether.
Principally females, I presume?
Oh, no. Every one of them men, and stout fellows too, I can tell you.
Indeed. I have always understood that the majority of lunatics were of the gentler sex.
It is generally so, but not always. Some time ago, there were about 27 patients here, and of that number, no less than 18 were women. But lately, matters have changed very much, as you see.
Yes, have changed very much, as you see.
Hold your tongues, every one of you. Madame Joyeuse, you do not have to hold your tongue with your fingers. All I ask is that the clamor cease.
And this gentlewoman, this good lady who has just spoken and who gives us the cock-a-doodle-dee-doo, she is, I presume, harmless? Quite harmless, eh?
Harmless? Why? What can you mean?
Only slightly touched, perhaps? I take it for granted that she is not particularly dangerously affected, eh?
Mon Dieu, what is it you imagine? This lady, my particular old friend, Madame Joyeuse, is absolutely sane as myself. She has her little eccentricities, to be sure, but then, you know, all old women, all very old women, are more or less eccentric.
To be sure. And then the rest of these ladies and gentlemen...
are my friends and keepers, my very good friends and assistants.
What? All of them? The women and all?
Assuredly, we could not do at all without the women. They are the best lunatic nurses in the world. They have a way of their own, you know. Their bright eyes have a marvelous effect. Something like the fascination of a snake, you know.
To be sure. They behave a little odd, eh? They're a little strange, don't you think so?
Odd? Queer? Why, do you really think so? We are not very prudish, to be sure, here in the South. do pretty much as we please, enjoy life and all that sort of thing, you know.
To be sure, to be sure.
And then perhaps this wine is a little heady, you know, a little strong, you understand, eh?
To be sure, to be sure. By the by, monsieur, did I understand you to say that the system you've adopted, in place of the celebrated soothing system, was one of very rigorous severity?
Oh, by no means. Our confinement is necessarily close, but the treatment, the medical treatment, I mean, is rather agreeable to the patients than otherwise.
And the new system is one of your own invention?
Not altogether. Some portions of it are referable to Professor Tarr, of whom you have necessarily heard, and again there are modifications in my plan, which I am happy to acknowledge as belonging of right to the celebrated Feather, with whom, I mistake not, you have the honor of an intimate acquaintance?
I'm quite ashamed to confess that I have never even heard the names of either gentleman before.
Good heavens, I surely do not hear you aright. You did not intend to say that you have never heard either of the learned Dr. Tarr or of the celebrated Professor Feather.
I'm forced to acknowledge my ignorance. But the truth should be held inviolate above all things. Nevertheless, I feel humbled to the dust not to be acquainted with the works of these no doubt extraordinary men. I will seek out their writings forthwith and peruse them with deliberate care. Monsieur Maillard, you have really, I must confess it, you have really made me ashamed of myself.
Say no more, my good young friend. Join me now in a glass.
To your good health, sir. And, sir, you mentioned something before dinner about the danger incurred in the old system of soothing. How is that?
Yes, there was occasionally very great danger indeed. There is no accounting for the caprices of madmen, and in my opinion, as well as that of Dr. Tarr and Professor Feather, it is never safe to permit them to run at large unattended. A lunatic may be soothed, as it is called, for a time, but in the end he is very apt to become obstreperous. His cunning, too, is proverbial and great. If he has a project in view, he conceals his design with a marvelous wisdom. And the dexterity with which he counterfeits sanity presents to the metaphysician one of the most singular problems in the study of mind. When a madman appears thoroughly sane, indeed, it is high time to put him in a straitjacket.
But the danger, my dear sir, of which you were speaking, in your own experience, during your control of this house, have you ever had practical reason to think liberty hazardous in the case of a lunatic?
Here? In my own experience? Why, I may say, yes. For example, not a very long while ago, a singular circumstance occurred in this very house. The soothing system, you know, was then in operation, and the patients were at large. They behaved remarkably well, especially so, any one of us of sense might have known that some devilish scheme was brewing from that particular fact, that the fellows behaved so remarkably well. And sure enough, one fine morning, the keepers found themselves pinioned hand and foot and thrown into the cells, where they were attended as if they were the lunatics by the lunatics themselves, who had usurped the offices of the keepers.
You don't tell me so. I've never heard anything so absurd in my life.
Fact. It all came to pass by means of our stupid fellow, a lunatic, who by some means had taken it into his head that he had invented a better system of government than any ever heard of before. Of lunatic government, I mean. He wished to give his invention a trial, I suppose, and so he persuaded the rest of the patients to join him in a conspiracy for the overthrow of the reigning powers.
And he really succeeded?
No doubt of it. The keepers unkept were soon made to exchange places. Not that exactly either, for the madmen had been free, but the keepers were shut up in cells forthwith and treated, I'm sorry to say, in a very cavalier manner.
But I presume a counter-revolution was soon effected. This condition of things could not have long existed. The country people in the neighborhood, visitors coming to see the establishment, would have given the alarm.
Well, there you are. The head rebel was too cunning for that. He admitted no visitors at all, with the exception, one day, of a very stupid-looking young gentleman of whom he had no reason to be afraid. He let him in to see the place, just by way of variety, and to have a little fun with him. As soon as he had gammoned him sufficiently, he let him out and sent him about his business.
And how long, then, did the madman reign?
Oh, a very long time indeed. A month, certainly. How much longer, I can't precisely say. In the meantime, the lunatics had a jolly season of it. That you may swear. They doffed their own shabby clothes and made free with the family wardrobe and jewels. The cellars of the chateau were well stocked with wine. And these madmen are just the devils who know how to drink it. They lived well, I can tell you.
And the treatment? What was the particular species of treatment which the leader of the rebels put into operation?
Why, as for that, a madman is not necessarily a fool, as I have already observed. And it is my honest opinion that his treatment was a much better treatment than that which it superseded. It was a very capital system indeed. Simple, neat, no trouble at all. In fact, it was delicious. It was...
Gracious heavens! The lunatics have most undoubtedly broken loose.
I very much feel it is so.
All right, man, let's break down this door! Ready? 1, 2, 3!
Cock-a-doodle-doo!
All right, watch out! Grab him! Now get that one! Get him! Look out! Look out!
The episode was brought to a successful denouement later that night when everything was explained by one of the guards who had crashed through the door. Monsieur Maillard, it appeared, in giving me the account of the lunatic who had excited his fellows to rebellion, had merely been relating his own exploits. This gentleman had, indeed, some 2 or 3 years before, been the superintendent of the establishment, but grew crazy himself and so became a patient. The keepers, 10 in number, having been suddenly overpowered, were first well tarred, then carefully feathered, and then shut up in underground cells. They had been so imprisoned for more than a month, during which period Monsieur Maillard had allowed them to be repeatedly tarred and feathered, which constituted his system, and only sustained through bread and water. The latter was pumped on them daily. At length, one escaping through a sewer gave freedom to all the rest. The soothing system, with important modifications, has been resumed at the chateau. Yet I cannot help agreeing with Monsieur Maillard that his own treatment was a very capital one of its kind. As he justly observed, it was simple, neat, and gave no trouble at all, not the least. I have only to add that, although I have searched every library in Europe for the works of Dr. Tarr and Professor Feather, I have, up to the present day, utterly failed in my endeavors at procuring an edition.
And so ends the curious tale of the system of Dr. Tarr and Professor Feather by Edgar Allan Poe. His story may be the genesis of that expression, "The lunatics are running the asylum." We hope you've enjoyed this presentation, which was adapted for radio by Brad Buchanan. Our producer is Darren Helwich. Tonight's cast included Chris Bowling as the gullible protagonist and Willie Wilson as Superintendent Maillard. The various inmates were played by Dave Collins, Aaron Hunsley, Sue Ellersick, Darren Helwich, and myself. This is your narrator, Byron Scott, hoping you'll join us again at this same time for another entertaining half hour at the Maplewood Barn Radio Theater, right here on KBIA. And if you want to hear this show again, you can turn to kbia.org, the Arts and Culture section, to hear the podcast. Good night.